If you run a school website, this is the show for you. Sally and I finish our book, Church and School Website Content, talking about school websites and classroom websites, the stuff that goes in them. All that and more coming up. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 305 for Tuesday, September 3rd, 2013. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry. And where those two come together, we try and figure that out, share that with you, get your reaction, and then do it again each week. And doing it with me each week is Sally Draper from New Ulm, Minnesota. I almost said sleepy eye, Sally.
Change of location for us. And we are in New Ulm, and I'm coming to you from my new lovely home office and excited to be joining you. I hope that you had a wonderful Labor Day weekend, Martin. Did you?
I did.
Do anything special?
To go down to Southern Indiana, visit with my daughter and son-in-law, and played golf, which was a rare occurrence for me. So I enjoyed that and had some great weather. So I'm back and ready to go. How about you?
Yeah, we capped off the weekend with a wonderful barbecue. I had a shrimp on the Barbie, did some shish kebabs, and raspberry dump cake for dessert. So doesn't get better than that.
Nice, nice. Yeah. So, Sally, we are at the end of our summer-long series. Maybe that's only fitting as, you know, the show after Labor Day. We were wrapping things up, no more white. We are writing and completing our ebook, Church and School Website Content. A little bit different for us, although I enjoyed the ebook writing process, but we weren't really talking about technology. We were talking about the stuff that technology enables, and that's the good content that you want on your website.
Yeah, I love that we took a step away from technology, but I'll tell you what, it was outside of my comfort zone. All the geeks listening will appreciate the technology is really the easy part. That content is where the challenge is, and that's what keeps your website very active and keeps your website visitors returning to find more great content. So certainly the key piece of any good website is to have great content. And that goes for schools and classrooms as well, which is what our focus is for today. Kind of actually tying together everything we've been talking about all summer and looking at what goes into a school site. And we kind of take two different approaches. We want to give you the basics, because we want you to be able to start from scratch. If you don't have a school site yet, or if you're just looking to completely revamp your school site, here's where to start. You know, make sure you include these things, and then we'll notch it up a level and give you some more ideas for a more advanced school site as well.
Yep. Before we maybe go jump right into to the school website chapter, our final chapter, we did have a little bit of feedback from last chapter.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We heard from Leslie Bergerman, who's at Good Shepherd in West Allis, Wisconsin. And Leslie regularly communicates with us on our Facebook page. So just a little prop for you guys joining our Facebook page or liking our Facebook page if you aren't there yet. Leslie wrote, regarding church websites, where we talked about putting your church bulletin and newsletter and things along those lines on your website. She said, we've struggled with the issue of posting church bulletins on the internet. Our bulletins so often contain personal phone numbers of members, and we haven't obtained their permission to post them. If we make our bulletins accessible only via secure password download, then what's the point for the non-member website visitor? We do post our school notes, but have instructed the faculty and staff to refer to children by first name only. After a period of adjustment, all is well with the school notes. Parents were concerned that with first and last names provided, child predators could hunt down targeted children, knowing their age, name, and school attendance. So that gets a little bit into our school discussion for today as well, but basically being very sensitive to that private information. And perhaps, you know, a solution for a church bulletin might be to have two versions, more work, but stripping out names and phone numbers and just putting in the more generic announcements and things that are part of your bulletin for posting on the web.
Yeah, that's a great conversation to have at a couple of different levels, and it can be very challenging for a church or a school that really only has a public website and doesn't have a private facing side where there's a login or a student information system, as we're going to talk about here as we discuss the chapter. So you want to be sensitive to that, and remember that whatever you put on the web is probably going to be searched and indexed by Google. So a Google search may turn up content on your website about a particular person. We had an incident like that at our church too, where one of our council members did a search on his name, found that we had information on our website about him, whether it was birthday or anniversary or something like that. So you can get a lot of personal information just through a Google search. You don't even have to go to the right website. Google does that for you. So just be cautious about that. And Leslie brings up a great point. You want to be intentional about what you put there and make sure that you understand what the consequences are.
Definitely. And I think that goes triple for school websites. As she mentioned, you know, it's not just putting an adult at risk, but if you begin to be careless with child information, then that could open up predators to seek out those children and know personal information about them. So, yeah, whatever it takes to be triply secure on your school and classroom sites is really important. I know she mentioned just using first names. When I had students doing projects, oftentimes they used a dummy name or student one, student two, or whatever it may be, so that we never even use their real first names on the website.
Right. Yep. Everybody's going to kind of figure it out for themselves, but just make sure you are indeed trying to figure it out, so because it is a sensitive issue. So Sally, with that, let's talk about school websites. That's the last chapter in our book. You might remember yesterday or last week we talked about church websites, which we talked about being fairly complex or can be complex, but school sites can be equally or maybe even more complex for two reasons. I think their audiences can vary wildly along with their purpose. And finally, you know, the second big differentiator is you may have a number of more contributors to a school website. You have maybe an entire faculty and principal and school volunteers and
students.
Students, right, that all need to interact with your website, maybe even contributing content. And they may all have different levels of technical capabilities. So the system really needs to support those different levels, because you may not have the ability to train each and every one of them.
Yep. And so maybe, you know, just keeping that content hat on, maybe it's a good idea to have someone who has an overview role for your school website. So yes, faculty can do their pages and, you know, students can contribute in a certain area or whatever it may be. But you have one person who's kind of the ultimate editor of the website, who has the responsibility of making sure it all kind of flows together. That might be a good idea when you're bringing in so many different people to touch the site, just to keep some consistency and even a professional level to the way that you're presenting the information on the site.
Right. So let's take a look at maybe a simple or a typical school website that is not you know, more advanced, but just getting started perhaps. And there are just maybe four or five things that most of those sites will likely have. You probably want a news section. And this is more, I guess this would be for the visitor as well as the, you know, the parent. So you've got basic information there, school news, maybe you have a handbook, that kind of thing. You probably want to have a little bit of information about your teachers, your faculty, your staff, what they're like, what their background is, what their educational background is, and their, you know, their experience level.
And maybe including contact information there too. It's nice to have an email address.
Right. Right, absolutely. And then most schools have a parent-teacher organization or PTO that would likely have a page there on the site somewhere, just if not updated regularly, just an informational page about when that group meets and what their purpose is within the organization and some of the things maybe that they're interested in doing, just more promotional than anything else. Then maybe an area of the site for students. Sal, you mentioned student projects. That would probably be something that would be fairly easy to publish and post and keep up to date because that content is coming in on a regular basis. So that would be an area you want to maybe highlight and say, you know, take a look at what we're doing now. And that could be a way to keep even a simple website a little more current, a little more interesting, relevant, give a reason for people to come to it.
Yeah, one idea might be to trade off that responsibility among the classrooms or the grade levels. So
great idea. This is
the month to feature third grade, and next month we'll feature fourth grade projects or whatever, so that one classroom or teacher doesn't have the responsibility of keeping things up to date the whole school year.
Yeah, great idea. Great way to keep it kind of slow and simple, you know, at the beginning, and it's not on every teacher in every classroom to do that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, another thing that you'd want to include on the site, even a simple site, is photos. And again, some of the privacy concerns are there too, but you want to give an idea to the visitor that in visual form what's going on. And we talked about the importance of photos in a previous chapter. And then finally, your connection with the church, link back to the church so that that connection is easily made and you can move pretty seamlessly between those sites.
Yep, that's a great start for a simple site, and you know, keeping it simple, not overwhelming to you, and then gradually adding and growing the site over time. But if you're just getting started, I think those are the basics that will help you have a presentable web location for your school.
Mm-hmm. So. Then going on to maybe the more advanced or complex school site, some of these things will sound familiar because we talked about them on the church level. A student and or parent welcome page, you know, what do the new parent and their child need to know about before that first day of school? So very timely here. And it could be, you know, enrollment information, you know, tuition rates and fees and schedules, those kinds of things, book list, those kinds of things are all going to be things that the person coming into your school for the first time is going to want to know.
Yeah, I think you also want to have some emphasis here on the religious training of your school. So people, especially outside our fellowship, who are looking for a good private education may not be realizing, the religious training that goes along with education in your school. So you probably want to be excited and upfront about the good news that you have to share.
Right. And then you have that whole news section that we spoke of with the simple website, but it could easily be expanded. Obviously, you have school news in both sites, but that handbook, maybe all your policies, your internet or computer usage policies, permission forms, general forms, basically making it a hub for all forms and information about your school.
You know, one thing we haven't mentioned, and it kind of goes under news and policies, is the calendar events, the news of what's happening on a week-to-week basis. Maybe many schools post their hot lunch schedule or, fundraising information or kids singing schedules. Things like that would certainly fall under this news and policies. And
athletic
or more
schedule,
you know,
right.
All exactly.
Then an area we're going to carve out in just a minute a little bit more fully, classroom pages where you have all kinds of things related to one individual classroom. And then some of the other things that we already mentioned, PTO, photos. Here you might want to get into videos. Event videos are great to post there. The video of the kindergarten skit or the class singing or sporting events, those kinds of things are all things that would be interesting to website visitors. And then just a link section to other educational sites and resources would be something that a more advanced school website would maybe want to cultivate and maintain that list.
Yeah, that's one of the more popular areas of the St. John's website. The kids actually, first of all, I should say the parents appreciate that we provide links that are kid friendly and safe, that the teachers have vetted, that we know, you know, we have a comfort level with, that the kids can go there safely. And then the kids pick up on the fact that there's good links there, even if it's to links to games or whatever. A lot of times they can be educational games or anything you're using in the classroom. If you're using online textbooks, you could include those links. And then the kids, oftentimes you'll add a new link and the kids will say, hey, I saw the new link you added. You know, they're picking up on that and monitoring that page and coming back to it quite often. So that link page can become a very popular area of your website.
Right. And Sally, we should probably close this chapter with just a little bit more of a discussion around classroom pages or classroom subsites, if you want to call them that. And there's a lot of stuff that can go in there. Maybe one of the things you want to consider first is whether your school already has a built-in system for some of this kind of content. Sometimes that's called an SIS or student information system, where you have the ability for students to log in or parents to log in to get school news, to see the calendar, the hot lunch schedule, that kind of stuff, but also then see stuff about a particular classroom. And that would be things that would make sense for a student to go to every day or a parent to go through every day and see, you know, what's going on with assignments, how about grades, those kinds of things.
Yeah, and that's one example. Another example would be to actually show, to actually use a dedicated social kind of site, like Edmodo we've talked about in the past, and also Schoology. And both of those are geared toward classroom websites, but they're kind of a Facebook feel. They allow the students to interact with each other, have kind of a discussion board feel to them, have chat. But you can also post things like quizzes, you can post assignments, kids can upload documents to you through Schoology and Edmodo. So your classroom site becomes an interactive site where you're discussing and sharing assignments. And parents can have logins there as well and be able to kind of monitor things and see what their students are involved in with those types of tools.
Yeah, it's a virtual classroom where students both inside and outside the classroom can have access to some of the same resources, so that there's never a time where they have to call the teacher or you know, email or whatever and say, well, what was that assignment? I missed that. So that's always online and available for them. Sally, maybe as I was writing this chapter, one thing really occurred to me when talking about classrooms, in that there's a unique technology that I think is a kind of a good fit in some circumstances for a lot of classrooms, and that's the blog, where a blog is a chronological listing of posts. And that's the way a classroom works. You stack one day after another. And I've seen some teachers use blogs very effectively to keep everybody up to date, both parent and students, about what's going on in the classroom. They can post the previous day's activities, pictures, videos, those kinds of things. But then also on that blog, show the assignments coming up for tomorrow or next week. And then using good tagging approaches, you can collect information so that parents or students can get right at the information they're looking for. So if you have a blog post that's assignments, you can have a tag called assignments. They click on that assignments tag and then they see just assignments. They don't see the news from the previous day or photos or web photo galleries, those kinds of things. So I think there is a lot of potential there. If you just want to keep it very simple, blogs are about as simple as it gets.
Right. And then the whole other side of blogging is you can have your students blogging. So perhaps it's English class and you're going to have them journaling each day, or they're going to, you know, write reflections on reports they're doing or studies that they're doing in social studies or science, whatever it may be. A great website is kidblog.org, and it's set up for easy classroom management. It ties together all the students' blogs into one combined blog stream, and you can make it completely private to your kids, just having access when they log in to the blog site, or you can share it publicly. You know, lots of controls built into it, and it's a free product. So check out kidblog.org if you want to maybe start off the school year with your students blogging.
Right. So that's the deal on school websites, and that's kind of the last chapter. We'll kind of have a conclusion here as well. But so I think we had all 13 chapters in all. Not a be-all, end-all of all the content, but I think just a good start to get you thinking about, you know, where do you start? And that was kind of the goal of the book, is to give you a resource that would say, well, I'm interested in putting a good web page together for our school or our church. Where do I start? What are the content categories? How to get this thing going? Where is this content coming from? So hopefully we were able to do that, Sally.
Yeah, I think I learned a little in the process too, Martin. So maybe I should tackle a church or school website in my future. Who knows?
Very good. Yeah. All right. Should we move along?
Sure. It's time for our picks of the week, I believe.
Yeah. And
I was excited to find a new website this week that I wanted to share with everyone. It's called faithlauncher.com. Faithlauncher.com is kind of a parallel to Kickstarter, and perhaps our audience is more familiar with Kickstarter. I know I've been invited to participate in Kickstarter efforts in the past, but the concept is it's crowdsourced funding. So you have a great idea. You want to start something phenomenal, a new product or a new website or whatever it may be, but you need some funding in order to do it. You need some money to spend to make your dreams become a reality. And the idea behind Kickstarter and now Faith Launcher is that you share your idea and you basically get buy-in from people and they support you financially and they can support you at whatever level they want to. And typically you provide them some levels of support and some goodwill in turn for their support. So let's say they give you $100, then they get a copy of your first CD if you want to make music CDs or whatever it may be. You know, there's different levels of support and they get something back after you've completed or launched your project or your vision, whatever it may be. The challenge with Kickstarter is it excludes charity projects or causes. So if you have an idea that is somewhat church related that you want to raise money for, Kickstarter is not the place for you. But faithlauncher.com is. It's a platform for Christian inspired projects. They serve Christian filmmakers, musicians, artists, entertainers, authors, ministry leaders, entrepreneurs, and other faith-based projects. So if you found that Kickstarter wasn't the place for you, perhaps Faith Launcher is. And I just thought it was, you know, worth a mention on the podcast. There may be those who have entrepreneurial kind of ideas brewing, and this might be the platform for you to seek some funding. So
yeah, I think Aaron Fry was trying to do a Kickstarter project a while back for really a project that would fit right in here, creating a tool that would collect notes from, you know, things like Lugus and elsewhere where they'd be easily transportable. So mm-hmm. You want to take a look at that.
Yep.
All right, Sally, my pick is a little tool that I ran across not too long ago that we're going to start implementing here, and it's a project management tool called Rike, W-R-I-K-E. And the reason that I like it is its simplicity, and I think there's application here in the small to medium-sized church office across our our listening audience. And it's really based on tasks. So everything in Rike is either one of two things. It's either a folder, which we're all familiar with and comfortable with, or a task. So you put these tasks in folders or subfolders, and it basically becomes the place that you spend your project management time. So as you create folders and you have the ability to add tasks, you can, around those tasks, add all kinds of things, including discussion around the task, and you can invite other people into the discussion. You can include attachments. You can include images, all kinds of things within the task. And then you can put those tasks on a timeline, so you can give them a timetable. You can assign them to different people. And the best part about it, perhaps, is that it works seamlessly with email. So you're not having to always go to the website. You can work right within your inbox and communicate with people. And Reich captures all of that. So you can go to Reich and see all of the conversation around a task right from email. They can be time tasks. So you say, well, I need to do this by, you know, tomorrow or by next week. You can collaborate on documents, and it has that social nature to it as well, where you can see kind of an activity stream of everything that's happening across a project or projects at whatever level you have permissions. You can create templates. So if you do the same thing over and over again, maybe it's a VBS project or a building project, those kinds of things, you can templatize those. And then you can prioritize those tasks as well. So we haven't gotten real deep into it yet. We're going to be working on that in the coming weeks. But I think there's a lot of promise for tools like this. Some of you have maybe heard of tools like Basecamp, those kinds of things. This is a competitor to them. The pricing is actually very reasonable. Let me just go to the pricing page here. 5 users are free. And you can store up to 2 gigabytes of data. If you want to go a little bit higher and get more storage, it gets a little bit more expensive. It becomes for maybe 15 users, 15 gigabytes of space, $99 a month. Although if you pay annually, that price comes way down. And if you're a nonprofit, like most of our viewers are, then it comes down even further. So I think you get 35% off of that. So it's actually, you know, a pretty good deal. And you get basically all of the tools that are available to them, including Outlook integration. There's a little plugin that you can use for Outlook that you can create and manage tasks right within Outlook if you are an Outlook user. They have all kinds of integration with Google Docs, Dropbox, MS Project. You can export to Excel, iCal, RSS, all those things come along with it. So this tool has been around for quite a while, Sally, and I think a lot of our churches and schools are beginning to see the value of project management tools. So it's an important area that I think a lot of our organizations need to think a little bit more closely about, more for efficiency and productivity than anything else, just to kind of keep track of this. And I see tools like this being especially useful for people that maybe aren't always in the same place at the same time, so that maybe they have a kickoff meeting and they're on board, but then it's very difficult to get them together, especially like with volunteers. So let's say you're going to, you know, create a, you know, do a camp or a Jesus Loves Me event or a VBS, something like that. You've got people all over the place doing all kinds of different things. This is a kind of tool that can bring all of that together and keep everybody on the same page and, you know, works really well. So I've got high hopes that this could be very useful in a church or school organization.
Perfect timing for me, Martin. I just fielded a question from my friend Jason Jasperson, who does the desktop publishing class at Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School. And one of their tasks is completing the school yearbook every year. And you know, a long-term project, but you know there must be a million little interim steps involved in that. And so he was looking for a project management solution. So maybe I'll be able to point Jason this direction.
Yep. So it's very simple, and I think that's the key with a lot of these things. The project can't cave in under the weight of the project management tool you're trying to manage it with. It needs to be simple and kind of work with your workflow, and email is just one of those things that everybody uses. So,
sure.
Sally, we want to maybe take one last stab at encouraging people to attend our Wells Tech camp.
Yeah, Wells Tech Camp is coming up in just 10 short days. We're in the final countdown. I am so excited for this event. I'm uber excited that we have over 90 people planning to attend. Isn't that an awesome number, Martin? We had no idea when we started. Yeah,
100.
Awesome. And to that end, we had initially set our registration deadline was September 2nd, but we've extended it to this Friday, September 6th. So if you're kind of on the fence and wondering if you should attend, you definitely should be there. You want to be part of the awesome giveaways at the end of the day. We're giving away a Mimeo Teach Bar and and a 16 gig Apple iPad, thanks to our friends at BG Innovations and Final Web for those donations. You have the chance to rub shoulders with all kinds of geekiness and eat some free food and be on the beautiful Martin Luther College campus. So please do plan to join us at Wells Tech Camp. We are doing our best to live stream all the events using Google Hangouts. We're crossing our fingers that that's going to all fall into place for us. And so if you can't be there in person, you know, watch the podcast and the wellstechcamp.wikispaces.com website for live Hangouts. And hopefully we'll also have all those Hangouts archived and you can watch them after the event's over as well.
Very good. So Wells Tech camp.wikispaces.com.
That's right. Oh, and I almost forgot. I'm wondering if there'll be bacon there. You know, bacon's really popular, and I'm thinking maybe somehow we need some bacon at Wells Tech Camp.
So if you, you know, to the MLC cafeteria.
Yeah. If that's what it takes to get you there, maybe we'll even provide some bacon. Who knows? You have to come and find out.
That's right. I can smell it already.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Let's move on to feedback, Sally.
All right. First up on feedback. Whoops, that's not first up. I'm out of order here with my tabs. First up is a cool infographic that was shared on Pinterest, of all places. This infographic is from the Languages blog, and it is Kids of the Past versus the Internet Generation. And it is really fun. It draws some neat conclusions between the people that are boomers that maybe are in your and my generation, Martin, versus that middle generation versus the kids of today. And, you know, how much internet usage and social media usage and other comparisons between the different generations. So maybe if you want to feel old, you might check this out, or just to get some perspective on the kids of today. I'm having trouble making it full screen. So it's kind of hard to see on my screen, but check out this cool infographic, Kids of the Past versus the Internet Generation. Martin, you had a link that you shared.
I did. And this is an interview I saw recently with Grammar Girl, Minyon Fogarty. And she's been doing this for a long, long time. And she recently has been in the internet news, so to speak, with a new iPad app from about the same topic. So if you're not familiar with Grammar Girl, she produces, I think it's a weekly podcast. She's been on the air, I think, longer than we have, Sally, maybe 400 episodes or something like that. And we can respect that. That's a lot of work. But she has a lot of resources, and this is really a great tool for anybody teaching English or language arts or literature, where if you're wondering or if you're looking for tools or advice on how to teach different things, like the difference to when you use IE or EG, or can you ever end a sentence with a preposition? Those kinds of things are all things she has covered. She has a book that she's written and all kinds of great blog posts, and she just does a great and a very professional job at getting the word out about all things grammar. And now with this iPad app, $1.99 on iTunes, it's kind of a fun game where you look at a sentence a sentence and try to identify parts of speech, all the way from gerunds to infinitives to obviously subjects and nouns and verbs and adverbs and those kinds of things. And it's harder than you might think. There are over 18,000 words in the game, so you can play for a long, long time. And kind of the gamification of grammar. So it might be a tool for you grammar teachers who are in the business of getting that word words across to your students. I think it almost every age level, but I would think specifically in elementary school, this might be a tool that you would look at, and maybe a podcast you'd want to follow. So that's Grammar Girl. Look for a link in our show notes.
Boy, I think maybe my age level needs that too, especially for somebody that's a math person. Sounds like a good exercise for my brain.
Yeah.
Next up, we had some links via Digo. The first one was from Jason Schmidt, and he shared that EdCanvas is now Blend space. So a new name for an existing product at Canvas. And basically what this allows you to do is put together a lot of different resources. So it's kind of a platform for pulling together multimedia resources and tracking them and seeing who's making use of them. Another tool basically for a classroom type website, or one tool that you might add to your classroom website. So a platform for teachers to use to pull together resources for multimedia lessons.
Nice.
I tagged an article on Digo as well. This one, it's not an article, it's actually software to download. It's a game that you can download to learn about working with the Microsoft Office ribbon of commands. It's called Ribbon Hero 2 Clippy's Second Chance. So those of you that have Windows or Microsoft Office history,
Clippy.
The annoying little icon that would pop up and offer to help you often. Well, now Clippy lives in Ribbon Hero 2. And I read some really great reviews of this game. So maybe for schools that are using Office as a tool to teach their students, or anyone that wants to learn more or have some fun learning about the ribbon in Microsoft Office, here's a game for you. It's a free download.
Cool. That's really helpful. And it looks nicely done as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the thing about Clippy, I didn't mind Clippy so much. It was just the little noise that went with him, you know, the little ding ding every time that he would pop up. That was probably the most annoying part. And I never was able to figure out how to separate the two. So
it reminds me kind of Pavlov's dog or whatever. You didn't respond to those dings well, huh, Martin?
Right.
Okay. A couple of links from our friend Gail Potratz. First of all, the ever-changing Chromebook and supervised users. And Gail's comments here were just, isn't it exciting to see how Chrome is responding to the education market. In this regard, there's a new way to add users that don't have an actual Google login. They're called supervised users, and they have a password, but they're actually under your existing account, and you can control what they have access to and things. The example they give is an account for their 5-year-old son. That was how this person kind of tested it out. He logs in with a password provided, and it allows him to be on the device without the need for a Google account. And I can help manage his experience. So if parents want to manage their children's appropriate use of a device, or teachers, this would be a new way to do this. It's called supervised users for the Chromebook.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd like to see how that plays out in a classroom situation where that would be appropriate.
And also Gail tagged the fact that YouVersion is currently giving away the NIV 2011 Bible. So this is normally a paid for Bible in the YouVersion software, but you can actually get it for free for right now. And I'm not sure how long that deal lasts. But if you don't have a copy of the NIV 11 in your arsenal on YouVersion, now would be the time. And we'll have a link to this article about how to download the version for offline viewing. Obviously, if you're connected to the internet, you can get access all the time. But when you're not able to be connected, you can actually download a copy to your device.
Yeah, they do that once in a while. I'm going to do that right now before I forget. But I don't know why they don't do it all the time, but it's almost kind of like a promotional thing. So it's a matter of just kind of hitting it right at the right time, and then, you know, doing it, and then you've got it. You don't have to do it again unless you get a new phone or, you know, a new tablet or something like that. So, and there's never any cost to it. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. All right. Then Martin, there was a ListServe post that you shared last week, I believe.
Yeah, I got a call from Pastor Mark Kares, who I think we've had on the show before, Truth in Love to Mormons. He's out in Idaho. And they are looking for somebody to help them with their website, both on the design side and on the development side, hopefully the same firm. They're looking for a group of people rather than an individual. They had an individual that left and kind of left them holding the bag, so to speak. So they'd like maybe a little bit of safety net there with more than just one person. So if you know of a firm, you know, it can be a small firm, doesn't really matter, somebody that kind of gets church ministry or ministry in general, doesn't necessarily need to be Wells per se, but maybe somebody you've worked with in the past that you think might be good, that would be something that you could pass along to Pastor Cares and help him out a little bit.
So we'll include a link in the show notes to that listserv post, and if you need contact information or whatever, that's in that post. So check it out.
Yep.
And then you also prompted me to make mention of the live stream services.
Yeah,
I think you had someone that was updating this live stream page on our Wells Tech Wiki.
Yep. There was the Point of Grace, which is a campus ministry in that serves University of Wisconsin Milwaukee, had stream services, but now they're working with a little bit different ministry leadership team, and they're no longer streaming. So that is, we took them off the list. They reminded us that they're not doing that anymore. But I'm sure that list is not complete, Sally. So just an encouragement to everybody that if you are streaming, live streaming in this case, and you're not on this list, and there aren't many on this list, please let us know. This is not an official list, but this is just one that Sally, out of the goodness of her heart, puts this together. And in fact, it doesn't have to be Sally that puts the name on here. This is a wiki, so you just need to log in, get a free account, and throw your listing on there with a link to the live stream. That would be great. We'd love to have this more complete. I'm sure, Sally, that there's more than just the ones here.
Definitely. So, yeah, add to our wiki and help us share the good news with more people via the live stream services that are going on out there.
Very good. Is that it for feedback?
That will do it for this week, Martin.
Just a reminder, we love feedback. So if you are so inclined, there are many ways to do that. The best way to start is just to go to our show notes website, wellstech.wells.net. And then across the top, the upper right, you're going to see a bunch of different options for how to connect with us, from Facebook and Twitter to Google+ to Pinterest to the listserv, to email wellstech@wells.net, to just leaving us a note there on one of the show notes with a comment, or even leaving a voicemail. So lots of different options. Please do take the time to do that. It really makes the show better for everybody. So we would enjoy that feedback. And we pretty much get through all the feedback we get each week. So don't be shy.
Definitely.
Sally, next week, we're done with the book. But we're done with our own book. We're starting somebody else's.
That's right, Martin. For those that are new to Wells Tech, you may not realize that throughout the normal school year, we typically pick one book and read a chapter a month and discuss a book that's pertinent to technology and ministry and all the things going on in that space. We've done education-related books. We've done Facebook-related books. We've done a variety. And one of our recent guest on the Wells Tech podcast kind of inspired our book selection for this coming year. That was Professor David Tess, who's at Wisconsin Lutheran College. You can go back and listen to our interview with Dave back in June of 2013, where he asked us what the internet is doing to our brains. And that's actually the subtitle of the book we've selected for this year, The Shallows. Dave discussed it when we talked with him. We thought it was worth diving in a little bit deeper and just trying to figure out the effect that all of this rapid digitalization of our lives is having on our brains, and maybe draw some conclusions that aren't in the book, but applying it to our ministry efforts in schools and congregations as well. So that's the book selection. Next week, we're going to tackle the prologue in chapter one of the book. So if you want to read along with us, we will have a link in the show notes to where you can get the book on Amazon. I'm sure you can pick it up in a bookstore at the library as well. The Kindle edition is $11.50, and the prices go up from there for paperback and hardcover. But I have my copy, and I'm already well into reading it and enjoying the read. It's a pretty good reading, so I think you'll enjoy it.
That'll be an interesting ride. Yeah, I finished the prologue yesterday. I've got the Kindle version, so I've got it wherever I go. And whenever I have a few spare minutes, I jump in there and do some reading. So it should be interesting. Already very intriguing. Just the whole concept of the fact that, well, can our brains really be affected by, you know, the medium rather than just the content itself. So kind of the flip side of our conversation about just pure content with this, with our own ebook. Now we're not just talking about content, we're talking about the medium, the tool that's used to get that content to us. So very interesting. So tune in next week.
Sounds a lot like Marshall McLuhan, Martin.
Yeah, and his name does come up actually right away in the prologue. So.
Yep.
All right, let's close the show, Sally, with the music of Mike Wessendorf. Blessed is the One. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord and whose confidence is in Him. My soul finds rest in God alone. Salvation comes through Him. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord and whose confidence is in Him. My soul finds rest in God alone. Salvation comes through Him. You alone. My salvation, my fortress, I will not be shaken. Blessed is the one who walks with the Lord and whose hope for life is in Him. The help and refuge of my soul, redemption comes through Him. Alone of my salvation, my fortress, I will not be shaken. Comes through Him. Yeah.